The assigned lectionary passage for this Sunday comes from, again, of course, the Gospel of Mark, and we are reading from the second chapter. Jesus went out again beside the sea. The whole crowd gathered around him, and he taught them. As he was walking along, he saw Levi, son of Alphaeus, sitting at the tax booth, and he said to him, "Follow me." And he got up and followed him. And as he sat at dinner in Levi's house, many tax collectors and sinners were also sitting with Jesus and his disciples, for there were many who followed him. When the scribes of the Pharisees saw that he was eating with sinners and tax collectors, they said to his disciples, "Why does he eat with tax collectors and sinners?" When Jesus heard this, he said to them, "Those who are well have no need of a physician, but those who are sick. I have come to call not the righteous, but sinners." Now, John's disciples and the Pharisees were fasting, and people came and said to him, "Why do John's disciples and the disciples of the Pharisees fast, but your disciples do not fast?" Jesus said to them, "The wedding guests cannot fast while the bridegroom is with them, can they? As long as they have the bridegroom with them, they cannot fast. The days will come when the bridegroom is taken away from them, and they will fast on that day. No one sews a piece of unshrunk cloth on an old cloak. Otherwise, the patch pulls away from it, and the new from the old, and a worse tear is made. And no one puts new wine into old wineskins. Otherwise, the wine will burst the skins, and the wine is lost, and so are the skins. But one puts new wine into fresh wineskins." May God bless the reading and the hearing of this word. Amen. In the year 1530, astronomer Copernicus, a century before Galileo, caused absolute chaos in both church and society when he asserted that the earth was not only round, but that it rotated on its axis once a day and traveled around the sun once a year. Beyond its scientific implications, many believe that perhaps the greatest impact of this discovery was on the human ego. Why? Because if the Earth wasn't the center of the universe, then perhaps humankind wasn't either. And another cause of furor in the church and society erupted in 1859, when Charles Darwin introduced the concept that populations evolve over a course of generations through a process of natural selection. There are countless other examples throughout history of how new ideas and ways of thinking ran into the brick wall of orthodoxy and traditionalism. So how did the church respond? Well, like it always does when the status quo is challenged and threatened. When new ideas are too big to fit within the small box of its own understanding. The church responded with swift and harsh condemnation. And within the past 60 years, we have continued to witness many wholehearted church efforts to condemn new scientific ideas, new theological perspectives, and new ways of ordering society. And much of that condemnation has been hurled at those who have been advocates for equality for all people. Racial equality, gender equality, sexual identity equality. You know, advocates like you and me, and places like College Hill. Well, I want to share just a couple examples from just this past week. I attended a national symposium right here in Tulsa, sponsored by the John Hope Franklin Center for Reconciliation. And I'll have much, much more to say about this, but the work of racial reconciliation, especially in the continued backlight of the 1921 Tulsa Race Massacre. And yes, it was a massacre, not a riot.
is fraught with tension between the old and the new, both between our predominantly white culture and people of color, but also between the old and new within the African American community itself on how to move forward. And another example this past week was the festivities associated with Tulsa Pride. New and old understandings of sexual orientation continue to cause uproar in church and society, even though, thank heavens, great strides have been made. But as progressive Christians, however, we are also tempted to fall into the trap of thinking that because we have accepted many new ideas about science, new ideas about the Bible and the role of the church, that we would never be so narrow-minded. But it's not just about open-mindedness. It's also about the ability to accept change in any form. Regardless of how progressive we consider ourselves to be, do we not also still fall into routines of behavior and thought? Even here at church and how we worship, how we fellowship, etc. Human nature tends toward believing that after we do something or think something for a certain period of time, it becomes all but sacred to us. Yes, even we can confuse what has become simply routine with the attitude that it is the right way to act or think or believe. It really is true, people do not particularly like change. But if we have learned anything from Darwin's theory of evolution, it's this: nothing ever stays the same. And as people of faith, we connect the dots to declare that it is God who is the author of diversity and change. But regardless, I think it's safe to say that God certainly shook things up a lot through the new teaching and ministry of a man named Jesus of Nazareth. Jesus had a habit of breaking with tradition and routine, cultural as well as religious. He had the nerve to hang around with the kind of people that good religious folks just weren't supposed to connect with. And Jesus and his followers even had the gall to put on public displays of joy and celebration, when others, like the Pharisees and even the disciples of John the Baptist, solemnly fasted, restraining from food and frivolity. Well, that reminds me of the old definition of a Puritan. A Puritan was a person who was desperately afraid that someone, somewhere, was having fun. And in today's scriptural passage from the Gospel of Mark, Jesus uses the occasion to warn his disciples about the problems created by an inflexible and closed mind, a mind that refuses to even consider, let alone learn and accept new things. So Jesus warns them that an old small box will not readily hold new big ideas. And Jesus could have come up with a new beatitude, such as, "Blessed are the flexible, for they shall not tear or be broken." Instead, though, Jesus uses a couple of common, ordinary images, as was his style, to make his point. Jesus stated, "No one sews a patch of unshrunk cloth on an old garment." Why? What happens with an unshrunk piece of cloth when it gets wet? It shrinks. And some of us are old enough to remember buying blue jeans in the day before pre-shrunk cotton. You had to make sure they fit like a sack, so that after you washed them for the first time, you could still button them and the length wouldn't come halfway up your leg. We called those high water pants. And likewise, if an unshrunk patch of cloth is sewn onto an already shrunken piece of clothing, it will tear and ruin the garment when it becomes wet. And our mothers knew how to wash patches first before patching our clothes. By the way, do they people still patch clothes? No. Well, the lesson is that new patches on old garments can be dangerous, if not incompatible. And most likely, this analogy was used by the early church in Mark's day to apply to how new forms of religious practice and new theological ways of understanding God caused conflict with those who held on to the old ways of thinking and doing. And Mark also writes that Jesus used another proverb-like saying, "And no one puts new wine into old wineskins, otherwise the wine will burst the skins. And the wine is lost, and the skins as well. But one puts new wine into fresh wineskins." Now in Jesus' day, wine was kept in wineskins, which was a pouch made out of animal hides. There was no such thing as a wine bottle in our modern sense of the understanding. And when these skins are new, they had a certain elasticity and flexibility. As they grew old, they became stiff and unyielding. And new wine continues to ferment. It gives off gases, and these gases expand and cause pressure. This is our science lesson for today. If the wineskin is new, it is elastic enough to take the pressure. But if it is old, therefore rigid and inflexible, it will burst. And both the wine and the wineskin will be ruined. Jesus was trying to teach the staunch legalistic religious leaders of his day that he and his teachings were like that new patch of cloth, like that new wine. Conflict with the establishment, with those who held firmly to tradition and to the ways that things have always been done and believed, was therefore inevitable. What Jesus teaches his disciples and us is the necessity of being flexible, willing to change, willing to stretch, willing to be open-minded, willing to reform old ways of thinking and doing that no longer contribute to the good of church and society. Yes, there needs to be a willingness within the church to bend and stretch to meet its current needs, the needs of the community and an ever-changing culture. And that is part of the very definition of what it means to be progressive. But notice, however, this does not mean that we must become like the culture or that everything old is bad. But otherwise, if we're not careful, we become irrelevant. And this, according to many experts, is what seems to be happening within mainline denominations here in the 21st century. That is why over the past decade there has been an explosion of new thinking being put under the heading of the emerging church or the missional church movements. And Presbyterians have a new approach called the Next Conference, which seeks to explore and even innovate change within our denomination and our congregations. So how can all of this teaching be applied to our own lives? Well, perhaps it begins by asking if there are any habits, traditions, or beliefs that you and I are holding on to so tightly that we are putting up resistance to the work of God's Spirit in your life and mine. We as a congregation can apply all of this to College Hill as well. Are we being open and flexible enough to deal with all the newness that God and our culture is bringing to this congregation? Yes, change is always accompanied with resistance. But the question remains, will we continue to be flexible enough not to tear at our seams? So perhaps the beatitude most appropriate for College Hill continues to be, "Blessed are the flexible, for they are pliable in the hands of God." Amen.